listening to the Wait, What If podcast.
That was a story that was also true. There was a lot truer than the truth that I put down.
I saw what would look like these little dudes from like Monsters, Inc. movie, and they were kind of like knocking on my brain, opening it up a little bit, like peeking in, knocking on my brain, peeking in, knocking on my brain, peeking in.
As always, your host, Kevin Sullivan.
I have Pete Van Dyke, the creator and host of Live from Dutch Hall, a podcast out of, you guys are up in Ontario, right?
Yeah, we're in rural Ontario.
Rural. So
in the sticks.
Yeah. You know what's weird? I've had like, I want to say like the last half a dozen interviews I've done have all been Canadians. I don't know why.
Oh, really?
And actually, my last in-studio interview on Monday, I had someone in here, and he was from Canada, too. I don't know where he was from, but I figured it out because we were talking, and he's like, you guys say a few words a little different than us, and it's kind of a dead giveaway down here. It's how we know you've infiltrated.
Yeah, we give ourselves away a lot, actually, with certain things we say. A is one, I know for sure.
Yeah.
But did you know one Canadian phrase that I think is really interesting that you guys don't use is fuck the dog. You don't often say
we don't
sit around fucking the dog.
We say screw the pooch.
Oh, you do? Say screw the pooch?
Yeah, yeah. So if it
okay, so it's the same thing.
Yeah, it's the same thing. It's like PG-13.
What does your mean? Does your mean fornicating with an actual dog?
No, it means. so yours is just literal.
Yeah, it's cold in the wintertime up here.
That's right. That's right. Three Dog Night, right? Isn't that yeah. Canadian band or whatever?
Is that what it is?
I think so.
No, it means being lazy, right? It means being like not like avoiding work.
Yeah, screw the pooch here is like if you screwed the pooch, it means you just fucked up. That's all it is. It's like,
oh really?
Yeah, yeah.
Like shit the bed.
Yeah, well, shit the bed down here means either you were too drunk or lazy to get out of bed, or the second one is it broke. So if your truck shit the bed,
oh yeah, it broke.
Yeah, broke.
We'll use it for that too. Yeah, or my truck shit the bed or whatever.
Yeah.
Or something like that. Yeah, we'll say that too.
And then the other thing, you guys, is Zed. I don't know for the letter Z.
Yeah, we're Zed.
Yeah, that one. And what's weird is I'm going to be 40 this year, and it took me like 38 years to figure that out. I had no idea until I don't even know where I heard it. And probably one of my podcast or one of my guests said it. And I'm like, what the?
Oh, I told you it was Zed, eh?
Yeah.
Zed Top.
Yeah, Zed. Yeah. You don't really say that, do you?
No, we don't. No, we don't.
All right, that's good.
We're still brought up on Sesame Street like you Americans are. So yeah,
all right, that's good.
We still learn Z, yeah.
Good. And what's weird, I have two toddlers here at home, and all the programming through our public television all comes through Canada. I don't know why. Like all the actors. So we watch Daniel Tiger, and he'll say, you know, like, what's this about? And I'm like, whoa. That's the big dead giveaway.
Yeah, yeah. The aboots. I know. I that one I can't even hear. I can't even hear when people say it. Like that's one I just have to take you guys' word for it.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. I mean, I'm from the Boston area. So, and my wife's from actually my wife's real close to Canada. She's from Erie, Pennsylvania. And apparently,
that's really close to us. Actually,
oh, is it really?
Right across the lake. Right across the lake from us.
Yeah. Okay.
Do you mind getting the whiskey out of the freezer and a couple beers?
I was just sending for a bottle of whiskey there.
That's perfect.
We understand that's tradition for you guys too.
It's an absolute tradition. My neighbor, who's been on, he used to kind of co-host, but he's putting together a bar and he's really, really busy now. But he moved in, I don't know, about a year ago, and I had slowed down with my drinking for no 12-step program. I just, you know, I have two kids and everything, and he doesn't have kids yet. And he's like, yeah, come here, check out my bar. And he's designing a bar in the town that we're in. And then he shows me his, like, I don't even know what you would call it, like a temple of whiskey. There's a glow that comes from the room, and it's just from one end to the other. It's every type of whiskey you could possibly imagine. So,
well, we were lucky enough. We have a sponsor for our show, Clean Flow, they're called.
Okay.
And they send us a bottle of this rye whiskey, which we like to drink. And what's it called? It's Northern Harvest Rye.
All right.
Is what they sent us. And it's that's what we'll be drinking today.
All right. Fantastic.
And that's named the number one whiskey or rye whiskey in the world in 2016. That's what they told us.
Okay. Well, that sounds.
What are you drinking? Bourbon?
Yeah, we do a lot of bourbon down here. I'm drinking Jefferson's. It's one I discovered, I don't know, at some point, and I just really like it. It's kind of nice, clean, smooth taste. I drink that, and then another one called Booker's, but Booker's is like, I have no idea. It's very, very strong and smooth, so I can get sloppy pretty quickly on that, so I usually just go to...
Yeah, that's the danger of this stuff, too. It doesn't have that, like, little stink at the end of it where it makes you feel like you're going to puke.
Yeah.
This one here... it lacks that disgusting finish, so it makes it so you want to drink a whole bunch of them. Which means very dangerous.
Yeah, that's right. That's the difference. See, you're a mature drinker now instead of in the youth when it was like the plastic bottle of whatever you get your hands on, and you mix it with Coke. I would never mix any Coca-Cola. I would never mix with Coke anymore. So
I can't do it nowadays. My brother is ginger ale. That's what he uses, ginger ale.
Oh, really?
I said, you got a good bottle of rye there, like you should try it, like it is, like try it neat just to see what it tastes like.
Yeah.
And he goes, I never tried whiskey without ginger ale in it, so I wouldn't know what it tastes like without it.
That's right.
So he goes, that's the only way I can try it with ginger ale. That's how classy a ship I run here.
That's right. Yeah, I hear all sorts of people in the background now. Do you have like are these your friends, or these, tell me about your we might as well get into your podcast. I mean, that's what the interview is about.
Sure.
So from how I discovered you is how I'm pretty much a one-man show. I have some co-hosts that come on pretty regularly. One is, her name's Savannah Steele, and the other one is Mike Stojic. And then whoever else I can, you know, if I have a guest or something. I'm pretty much a one-man show, so I do booking. I do everything on my own. And one of the easiest ways I find is to go on Reddit and just flip through the AMA and see if there's anyone that has kind of a cool story. And I saw yours, and it sounded familiar because you're 40. From what I gathered from it, and you can obviously clarify anything here, but you quit your job, started a podcast, and got into the stand-up comedy routine, I
guess. Game as an old man.
Yeah, as an old man. That's right. I haven't crossed that river yet.
Now, how old are your kids, you said? They're toddlers?
Yeah, I got a 2-year-old and a 3-year-old.
Yeah. Mine are 12 and 14 now. And so, like, 40 really messed with me. Like, it was one of those things where you kind of take an inventory of your life and you look at it.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I was thinking, like, you know, it was what I was doing was providing my family with what they needed to live and all that, but it wasn't giving me much pleasure. And then as a result, you end up not only do you have like the emotional damage that comes with that, like where you're miserable or you're like maybe depressed or just grumpy,
yeah,
you know, taking it out on your wife and kids or something,
or
they pick up on that negative energy too. But also, I was physically like fat.
Yeah.
And didn't have like I was just really atrophying, I felt, because you're not being a man anymore. I just felt it wasn't true to who I was. Like, it wasn't true to my authentic self, if you will.
Yeah.
And when I quit, it was amazing, the transformation. Like, immediately lost 20 pounds, immediately you know, my sleep problems were better. My, you know, even like in the bedroom with your wife, I was better there. It was like more energetic, more, optimistic. It was the kid. And then my family picks up on that too, you know, like, yeah. So then you end up saying this thing though, did provide for me. It was not a long-term benefit for my family. I think that, and we were smart enough to know that when I started, I didn't like it. So we always were careful to spend less money than we made. And so that one of these days, I could afford to kind of build something from the ground up, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, rather than be stuck there.
That's huge. And when you think about it, I mean, I know it's cliche, you know, you get one chance at life and all this other crap. But I mean, it's as cliched as it is, it's true. I mean, you don't want to just waste away this one chance.
And yeah. But even if you are a religious person, you know, if you're a religious person, doesn't mean that you have to live a miserable existence just so you can have the next one good. Like, yeah, I don't see how that's going to be beneficial to anyone around you, you know, like. Even if you believe that you're going to die and go to paradise or whatever,
yeah,
you still could be, you're probably going to be a lot better person on earth if you're being more true to yourself, more honest, more, you know, like a happier individual rather than just being miserable.
That's true. That's true. And there's a kind of a metaphysical aspect to it, you know, that whole like positive vibration. But it's true. If you are feeling good and you are in a positive point in your life, it tends to reflect on those people around you and your relationship.
Oh, of course.
Better and things tend to just happen better. You know, the miserable people that seem to always talk about like shit going wrong in their life. Yeah. And it's like they bring it on themselves. Or they spend time just thinking about it all the time. And then, I mean, because shit happens to you every day, and you could sit there and jot down all the crappy things that happened to you in one day, or you could think about all the good stuff that happened to you and realize the crappy stuff is just, I mean, it's just part of the game of life.
I find there's a lot of people that take comfort in misery. They just like to have that company of a bunch of people bitching about Mondays or whatever it is, you know. And I never participated in that. I always felt it was counterproductive.
Yeah. No, that's right. And I work in medicine. I'm a PA. I don't know if you guys have those up there. It's kind of like a...
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, I can't tell you how many people walk in that are just miserable. And I see them on a, you know, 2-3 times a month sometimes with whatever is bothering them. And it's like, it could bring me down if I let it, but I don't. I mean, I just go in there and kind of laugh at myself about some of these things. But
so when I just wanted to kind of touch on your question about the podcast. When we started the podcast, I too was a one man show like yourself.
Okay.
Just tricking my friend coming in and then, or trying to book whatever guest I could, which is usually a family member or someone that I could, you know, just trick into coming in until I could get some chops. And then I got a couple better interviews as time went on. And then I was lucky enough that some of the people that I invited in were looking for a creative outlet as well.
Okay.
And where we live is fairly remote from big centers. So it's not like there's a lot of options for people that are that way inclined or whatever.
Yeah.
So we're kind of like a bit of a, what did you say, Steve? A bit of a refuge or a hostel for middle-aged, midlife crisis men.
Sure.
We're trying to do something cool with their life. Yeah.
I'm picturing.
So now we have my house band, the Nocturnal Emissions, and there is. There's three pretty stalwart members of the band, and then we also have a bass player that's becoming fairly regular, and then we have guest people that come in if they're musical, they'll join the band. We had a guy last night, Braden DeCooman, who came in. He's a professional musician and tours the States with a McCartney Years cover band.
Oh, really?
And fan of the show, he comes in and joins us sometimes on guitar. So it ended up. Ends up being quite good. So now with the regular cast of people, and I also have a bartender and my brother who's here every week. And with the regular cast, we've been able to develop a rapport with each other. And, you know, I think that the audience gets to know the other characters on the show. And then those that listen more regularly have, like, inside jokes that they get that maybe other people who are more of a passive listener don't get to participate with, you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's really built our product, I think. If you look at the show like that, I think that having the cast in of people, it's one, it makes, and it also makes you more responsible. Anytime you're more responsible, people, just like your kids, you know, you probably weren't as good of a person until you had people that made you, that were relying on you being that good. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a total change having two people around here. That it was funny. I don't know. Did you get the, when I was sending you an email, I was like, I usually dictate because I can't type worth shit with my fingers. And I was writing something and I was saying like, I can't call at 7 because I'll be chasing two naked toddlers. And then I hit send. And I was like, oh, man. So there was two things. I was like, is he going to think that I like to throw out pedophile jokes? And I hope he gets that. or he really thinks I'm chasing around naked toddlers. And then I
took them as your own toddlers, I guess. I was hoping with that they were yours. You
yeah.
Know?
Yeah. No, they're definitely
just random naked toddlers.
I chase them.
They're chasing like, after them does create the element of guilt.
That's right.
You know, when you say
they're no down here in the States, they're feral actually. So they get over the fence and I got to chase them out. But yeah. So, you started about 2 years ago. Is that right?
Yeah, 2.5. We were December of 2013 when we started.
And you do and I think I remember reading, you kind of set a thing for you that you're going to do one show. Is it every week?
Yeah, we do it every Thursday. We release a show. Well, we release show once a week, late Thursday night, early Friday morning, whenever we get finished.
Okay.
And I find that's important just to have that regular product, you know, that the regular listeners can count on.
Yeah.
And it's proven to get some, like, I find that my listenership, it goes up and down during the year based on the seasons, you know, it too, probably as a listener of a podcast that when the weather's nice, there's lots of yard work to do or something.
Yeah. And
you're probably not as apt to be listening. So I noticed that people will then, when the weather turns cold again, or when there's a rainy patch, they'll binge listen to the shows. So it's nice to have that weekly product that, you know, you can, people can know that they're at least going to get something every week from you.
Yeah.
And it creates discipline too. When you're trying, cause I was trying to build skills. I was a banker, you know, like I didn't know how to use a microphone. I didn't know how to talk for an hour and how to, you know, try to keep the interest of an audience and that sort of thing. So all those things, really, I felt by giving myself the goal that I had to do it every week, then I had to do it. Yeah. And even though I don't, it's just something that's self-imposed. It made me develop that discipline. And then as a result, you develop some skills, which is what I wanted to do in the first place.
Yeah.
Because even though I'm old, I figure I'm still going to live for a while. So I got time to learn new stuff.
Yeah, that's right.
So you didn't quit your job, though. You're still working, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm still a PA, but I work. Actually, it's like the best PA gig you could possibly have. 40 hours a week, no call. I have the time. So, you know, it's helped out because obviously I got a decent salary still going on. And I literally, if I had the time to put 8 hours a day into this, 10 hours a day, I could do it. I mean, there's no, and you probably agree, right? I mean, because.
Yeah, it's endless.
Yeah, yeah. Because you're constantly, at least I find myself constantly looking for people, constantly listening. Listening is part of the process. You know, you can listen to talk radio or you can listen to whatever, and that's not really going to give you, podcasting is its own thing. It's its own weird beast because 10 years ago, you know, you or I, this would be an impossibility unless you got a job somewhere at, like, I don't know, doing, which is funny. My first job out of college, I was doing traffic on the nines. That was the only radio thing I had in my past. And I did it for about 2 months. I did a traffic with, I don't know, some oldie station up in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, because it interested me. And then, I don't know, it was kind of, it wasn't what I expected. So I kind of bailed on that back then. But, yeah. Anyways, what I was saying is,
yeah, but this would be like satellite. This would be, you know, they would have to have, this would be like a satellite conference call. Remember that when they had like a news interview, you know, via satellite.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. That's
it
right.
It was a big deal. You know, it was a big deal. Nowadays, you know, like you can just do this on our phones, you know,
isn't it
anywhere on the street, you know, it's, we take it so for granted.
It blows
my kids
mind.
Will never know any different.
So, one of the common occurrence or themes on my show, we tend to talk about, I like to talk about like technology and where things are going, kind of like deep thoughts sort of thing. Anyways, that's my aim for it. And one of the thing is, you know, look back the last 25 years and then look, or I guess you could say, let's just start from the 80s and go maybe to like 2005. And then over the last 10 years from 2005 till now, you've had more technology explode over the last 10 years than you had for the 25 years prior to that, or even 50 years prior to that. I mean, the fact that you can do a radio show internationally on a cell phone with good sound and reach, I mean, it just blows my mind, and it's only getting better. So
with that though, because it's because the market's accessible to everyone, because anyone with an internet connection and, you know, a few bucks can have pretty high technology or a good technology enough to make something look professional.
Yeah.
Do you think that it's like, is it almost impossible to get noticed? Like, how do you get noticed versus amongst all of the white noise that's out there?
Yeah, it's hard. I heard a stat yesterday. I think someone tweeted out that there's over 250,000 podcasts worldwide, which actually to me sounds kind of like a low number, but I don't know. I guess if you had to over 250,000 channels on your TV, that'd be kind of a rough thing. But yeah, it's a hard thing. I don't know. What was your, I guess, method for reaching people at the beginning?
It's the same one I have now, and it's really to try. Like, social media is huge for us because of our budget, which is really small because we don't make any money. Yeah. And so we use social media heavily. And then we actually, anytime you can make a personal connection with your listener, whether it be on social media or going out at a, like getting a person that you can physically touch somewhere,
yeah,
and say like, and get them to listen to your show. Like, it's literally been like that, like getting a listener one at a time,
mm-hmm.
and then just keep, hopefully you can keep them, you know?
Yeah.
And, you notice that, that it does work, you know, there's a lot more awareness for the show than there was. We've had a couple of newspaper articles written about us and stuff like that, which has helped. And, noticed, at least locally too, you know, people are aware of us even if they don't listen.
Yeah.
And so I think that's going to serve us better. So our big thing is to get out there, and I'd like to do more of that, where we actually tour and do a couple live podcasts so that we can actually get our audience to meet us, you know.
Yeah,
I think that it only serves to further that personal connection where people feel like they're part of the show rather than a listener of the show, you know.
And I find it's the consistency too that that'll get you there. Like I've been using Twitter. That's been one of my bigger ways to get out there, and you know, I find myself, if I'm not doing anything, I'm on there trying to engage and trying to find people that are, you know, interested in the same things. And it's kind of cool. My next door neighbor, she's I guess you call it a social media coach. So she basically, she teaches businesses how to do this. She does pretty well. So
she helped you.
Yeah. She said, yeah, come on over. And she's pretty much my social media coach for, you know, we trade booze or, you know, little things like that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So that's a big deal, man.
It really is. She's helped out. I mean, every time I go to her, and then, you know, she gives me these tips, and I can give her a plug. It's exclusive 25th. Oh man, I'm going to fuck up the name of her business. It'll be on my website. But yeah, anytime she gives me updates or plans, I come home, I do them, and then, you know, I'll see a jump in my numbers. I mean, she knows what she's doing, and it's kind of a new, I guess, I wouldn't say technology. It's a new thing, you know, to be aware of social media and use
it. It's a science. It really is a science. Mm-hmm. I've heard the coaches that, you know, they tell you the times a day to do it, and they know when people get bored at work and they're checking their social media and all that stuff. They know all those tricks, and I don't know them yet.
That's
so
right.
I need a neighbor like yours. I think I need to get a better neighbors.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I mean, she showed me these websites that will actually track your Twitter usage and when people are on and when people are actually checking out your tweets. And so she gave me the hours when I should be tweeting. And so.
Yeah, it's cool. I have friends in comedy that are doing the same thing because everyone's just trying to get noticed, right?
Yeah.
And some of them get, you know, controversy is an interesting thing, you know, like sometimes if you can say the right thing to really rile people up, you get noticed. And I'm not sure if I'm not sure if it's good or bad. I've tried to offend people and it's not worked. And people just keep thinking it's funny or something, and they don't get mad at me. I really, since 2.5 years, I don't think I've got anyone real pissed.
Well,
one person.
We kind of threw out a pedophile joke there and feral toddler, so maybe that'll work.
Doesn't do
know.
Anything. Nothing at all.
Yeah, that's weird.
It just rolls off their back, like, you know, those sort of pedophile jokes. We need something darker for my audience. We're a bunch of degenerates.
You just go over the deep end. Think of the most filthy thing and start tweeting it out. See what? Do you know what? Just well, I was going to say it worked for Donald Trump down here. So I don't.
Just say horrible things and you can be president.
That's right. That's right. That's how they got him. You just started. You got into comedy too, right around the same time, right?
I started comedy 8 months, if you don't count the show. Mm-hmm. But I did use the show a lot of times to test material out, like just to practice saying material and stuff like that, and try to work out concepts where there's not as much pressure to do it in like 12 seconds, so you can do it over a little bit longer.
Yeah.
So I thought the podcast would be good for that. Actually, last night we had two comedians on, and we were just talking before the show. Someone was talking about a ridiculous subject, and then you're able to put a tag or a punchline on it. And then you're saying, hey, that worked, eh? Like the whole room laughed. So I'm going to use that tomorrow night. So like podcast has been great for helping flesh out material, you know, that otherwise would go lost or whatever. Just bounce around. So I find the two mediums to go very well together as far as the way at least we do our show, how it's there's a lot of freeform stuff, and we do a segment called Weird Facts where it's kind of like rapid fire topics, so it allows you to kind of improv on different things, and then material comes out of that.
Yeah, and it's important to have people on that, I guess, are quick. Are also on the same wavelength as you.
It's great having comics on. I love having comics on because they're just, like you said, so quick-witted and all that stuff that I always have to listen back to those shows just to get all the jokes that I missed when I was sitting here. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like some of those guys are just so quick, you can't keep up to them. So it's always a pleasure when you feel like you're the worst guy in the room. You know, you've got a good show.
Yeah, you're right. The other thing too is if someone doesn't get you, it makes it so much harder because with my show and just me in general, I tend to be very sarcastic and I just say what's on my mind, but it's always in a non-serious type of fashion. And some people come on and they just don't, it just doesn't click. And those are the worst shows because I don't know if you, well, of course you've had them where, you know, you're what, 150 episodes in now, maybe a little more.
Oh yeah. Real stinkers in there.
Yeah. Oh God. The ones where you're just, you're sweating and you're like, you get sweat flop or flop sweat for an hour and a half.
I have like cursing Tourette's at night with my wife. I just sit in bed like, fuck. Like, you think of all the things you said and I put that on the internet and now everyone's going to hear it tomorrow. And
yeah.
It's garbage,
yeah.
It's the same thing when you go do a set comedy, you know, like I can have a set go well where I actually feel like, you know, people laughed at me and I still go home and beat myself up over every second of it that I kind of didn't go as well as it did in my, you know what I mean?
Oh yeah. It's the worst. I did. I did stand up about 20 years ago, right when I graduated college for a couple of years up in Boston. When you go
Boston's
out,
a tough town too, though, right?
Oh, it's brutal. Yeah. Yeah. It was, I mean, it's like a, and you know, I mean, you obviously have to start with your open mics and whenever you go to them, you see the same people and it's very clicky, you know, and groups kind of hang out with, you know, you get those, hipster comics who, I don't know, have their own little thing. And then you have
more alternative. And
stuff. Yeah. Yeah. And you go and you just, I just remember it being brutal. I loved it. I loved the excitement, you know, that, you know, you're going to go on about 5 minutes and you don't know.
Yeah. It's a real adrenaline rush. That's something that I had to get used to.
Yeah.
Was the coming down afterwards. Like I don't get nervous. I just get this adrenaline rush. And then you start, after you're done, you kind of like have the shakes or something when you're coming down from it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, when you're by yourself and in my case, driving an hour home, you know, it's like, you could have had the best night in the world, but you still just have this long, lonely drive home after nothing and nobody saw you.
And do you record your sets so you can listen to them and figure out, you know?
Some of them I do. I'm not as disciplined as I should on that. Yeah. And, but I can't stand myself. You know, it's a big part of my problem is that my phone's taking too much of a beating. from me listening to my sets.
That's the perfect setup for a comedian. Comedians have to hate themselves first.
Oh, great. I got that one down.
There you go.
I'm really good at it. Yeah.
If you were brought up with like puppy dogs and ice cream and everything was wonderful and you loved yourself, you wouldn't be a comic.
Yeah, you would be a comic. You'd be probably just in a somewhere just pleasantly happy.
That's
you know?
Right.
You just, I can't imagine it, you know?
So,
I don't know. Oh, I have a question for you.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, you maintain a good job, and you obviously have a creative draw, like something pulling you in creatively within yourself, right?
Right, right.
And now you have these children, you have two toddlers at home, and now you have to raise them and kind of steer them on a path or give them advice on what they should do.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see in the United States the same, like, can you, with a clear conscience, recommend your kids go the college route and try to get a good job with the corporation?
Yeah, yeah.
Do all that stuff? Or do you want to try to say to them, like, you know, find a path that's different from this machine that's been built, that's kind of, I don't know, maybe you're not as upset about the machine as I am, but...
No, you're pretty much, that's what I think about when I go to bed at night. You know, those are the things that I'm pretty much... So I used to be in the military, and I was a type A personality. I was so fucking wound up, like I don't even know what to use there. I was just wound up tight. And all it took was, you know, going to Iraq a few times. And I realized that life is pretty special, and you got to kind of just relax and pull back the throttle, as we say. I used to be in the aviation, and then I don't know, something just switched, and from that point on I went from type A to type B. Now, with that said,
how old were you then?
It was probably about 30 when I turned relaxed. Like, I don't even know how to explain it. And there was no method to it. I just kind of said, I wouldn't call it an epiphany, but I was just like, there was this guy, and if you haven't heard about him, check him out. His name was, so back in Vietnam, they had this, I'm not that old. This guy had this underground radio program, and he broadcasted from a brothel. And
oh yes, I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, Rabbit, something Rabbit. Yeah,
the Rabbit. Yeah, Dave Rabbit.
Dave Rabbit. That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
So he had a saying, and the saying is "fuck it before it fucks you." And when I heard that was probably one of the most, I don't know, like, influential things. I put it on a poster, and I would put it on my airplane or poster board when they would come in, the troops would come in, so they could see it. Because if you don't say fuck it, you know, this just kind of let things go, then it's definitely going to fuck you. And it was fucking me, especially, you know, going and flying combat missions, you know, one after the other, and just being so wound up tight, and coming home and feeling like everyone's still a threat, and it started to fuck me. You know, basically. And
oh yeah, man.
Yeah. And I
feel so guilty right now. Listening to you.
Why is that?
Because I'm like, I have the same story, except mine involves banking. Yours involves like real danger and like, you know, like real horrors of life. And mine just involves like boredom and like corporate bullshit. You know?
Well, yeah. I don't know. I don't know what to say about that. I mean, mine was just...
Yeah, you have real shit. Yeah.
Yeah, I had some baggage. I don't know what the fuck my wife was thinking when she met me, but I...
Oh, you got a good one?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And
well, that's good, man. That's half the battle right there.
Yeah, it really is. So I guess she met me at the tail end of that. And then I got out of the military, and really, I mean, I can't, you know, some people are like, you know, we were talking about at the beginning of the show is, you know, some people complain about stuff all over the place, and I have nothing to complain about. I mean, I just don't. And
yeah.
Oh, and that kind of brings us to the thought with the kids. So I'm very much on the line of, if my kid likes to drive nails, then that's fine, man. If he wants to be a carpenter, or if he wants to, I mean, trade school's fine. It's all about just having a skill. And, you know, if he goes to college and studies, I don't know, modern feminist literature with some you know, liberal arts major degree. I mean, that to me, that's kind of a waste of 4 years and however much money he's going to put into it. But if he can go in there, and I'm going to, and she, my daughter, and if she can get a skill and make herself marketable, and that's what I'm going to push, not push on them, but you know, that's what I'm going
to stand. To know that they can stand on their own feet without having to rely on somebody else.
Exactly.
If you have your own skill, you can do whatever you want. I always thought that when the way they taught us up here was when we were going through school. I don't know if it's the same down there, but they taught us if you were a bright kid, you'd go the route of the academic route, and you'd take all these, you know, university courses of theory and like general arts or general science or something.
Yeah.
And the kids that were less inclined at the school, they would get to take the trade courses and learn an actual craft of some sort. And we were taught that if the smart kids, those quote unquote smart kids, mind you, if they were not supposed to take the tech classes because they were for the other kids. And I said, well, why couldn't a smart kid be a smart plumber or a smart mechanic or something like that? You know, like I would have liked to have those options, you know, thinking about it in retrospect, you know?
Yeah.
Even with I have two daughters and for them, I just think, you know, you got to know who you are first and just pursue something that you're passionate about. And as long as that's true, you're being true to that, I think you'll find your way to make it work. You know, like you'll have to, if that's what you want to do.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if I'm ruining them or not, but I probably am.
Yeah. Seinfeld, you ever watch driving in cars with comedians or whatever that show's called?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He was talking,
great show.
He was talking to Patton Oswalt. And Patton was talking about screwing up his kids, and Jerry was like, it's not going to be what you think. You know, it's not going to be the time where it's going to be you got her peppermint ice cream versus chocolate, and that's going to screw her up for the rest of her life. So,
yeah, you know, some incident you don't even remember is the one that she's telling a psychiatrist.
That's right. So you got to realize you're going to interview. First of all, think about your relationship with your parents, and me and my wife talk about this all the time. We're like, you know, we'll just be, you know, everyone bitches about their parents and things like
that. Yeah. I think as a parent, you always try to give your kids what you didn't have.
And then
your attempt to get the balance that you didn't have as a child of your parents, you then overcompensate on one end and don't give them the other end that they're looking for.
Yeah.
And then the cycle continues just differently.
That's right. And then it's the pendulum of lack of
screwing health. People up. We'll have perpetual screwed up kids. I think it'll be just fine.
That's
the only hope we have, because kids today. My opinion is these millennials, and I sound like one of these old men that are on a soapbox. Back in my day, shaking my fist, you know. But like they seem like they got things too good. The things that they consider hardships are to us would have been a breeze, you know. Like we wouldn't. I was joking with my kids today about how I feel. I was joking with them that they feel bullied because their friend was indifferent to their Facebook post or something like that. You know, like that's how far it's gone to the other side. Is that they're so sensitive, and anything that's not perfect in their own head, it upsets them to the point where they just don't have any coping skills. You know, you have to. Where us, we grew up getting beat up, and well, not beat up, but you know, we end up. It was a different time. You know, like I was a child laborer, for heaven's sakes. I never thought twice about it.
Yeah,
you know, now I guess that's wrong. You know? but we had real things to deal with when we were kids, and the kids today, they seem like they got it pretty easy.
Yeah. And
I don't know. And I don't know how they're going to get the thick skin.
And back it up a little bit from there. I mean, my great grandfather, who I was lucky enough to know, he told me stories how they used to, this was up in Buffalo, New York. They used to stand on the side of the railroad tracks. And when the trains would come by, they would throw rocks at the conductor, and he would take shovelfuls of coal and whip it back at them. And the whole idea was they would then pick up
the coal.
Yeah, and bring it home. And that's a hardship.
That's something that's actually dealing with something, real things. I'm cold.
Yeah.
I have to get something to burn. Yeah.
Yeah. It makes that's me. I was just going to say.
It's kind of sad. I mean, we're obviously better off. You know, we're obviously better off. But there's something that we're not getting because of that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think it's, I think this, and you're right, you do see, you know, this generation, but I think you're right. I mean, there's something that's happening, especially with the way they want safe spaces and stuff. And it's like, I mean, picture if you could travel in time and bring back just like a mid-level, like a captain who had to lead a squad of Rangers on the beaches of Normandy, right? And he's 22 yeah. years old, and have him sit down and be like, well, here's my issues. Half the guys got killed. The other one guy's missing a leg. And, you know, and they're talking about like an email that went out. This is in Mizzou. That scared them and made them feel threatened about Halloween yeah. costumes. I mean, what have we become? It's, and then just go back further.
Guys, and those kids were lying about their age, right? So that they could yeah. have the opportunity to go through those horrors, you know?
Yeah, that's
right. What always blows my mind about the guys were like 17 and like lying about their age so they could fight in the war, you know?
Yeah.
And now a 17-year-old can't even drive.
Yeah, that's right. Down here, they can. Actually, it's probably a good idea.
I know. I thought about when I was that age, too. But actually, I drove for my summer job when I was 12. I had to drive a truck.
Man, you are a license.
Yeah, that's farm kids right down yeah. here. We just learned earlier.
That's funny. I used to drive. I wasn't quite that young, maybe 14 or 15. Up in New Hampshire, we could drive with a parent at that age. And my dad was a firefighter, so we'd go to like firefighter cookouts, and then he'd be too loaded to drive home. So that's how I learned how to drive.
No, that's a good way, man. Yeah. My kids are that age. I really wish I could use them. I'm like, I have a 14-year-old daughter. I'm like, you should know how to drive me home by now.
Yeah, that's right. I think it doesn't translate well to the 3-year-old.
Get with it, man. You got time.
That's right.
You know, I was thinking about that. What was I thinking? Oh, my dad, the way he taught me to drive. Mm-hmm. I was 11 years old, and we had an old Ford truck, gold Ford truck that was four on the floor, you know, like standard transmission. Mm-hmm. And he ran over my dog that day by accident. And so he's feeling real bad about himself.
Yeah.
But he had killed her dog. It was like probably the sixth or seventh dog he had run over in my lifetime at that time. And he was just driving, and he said, like, I don't want to drive anymore. Like, I've killed our dog. And I don't want to drive. You drive, right? So I'm 11. I've never driven a truck before. We're on the road. He just gets out, and I get in the driver's seat, and I'm looking at him for instructions, you know, like to say, you know, what do I do? And my dad just looked at me and said, like, first day on the farm, Pete, he goes, just drive the truck. So then I'm just sitting there grinding away and stuff like that. And then I figured out how to drive, and that was it.
That's right.
I mean, it's kind of like the old story. Old story about learning to swim. You just throw yourself in the pond, you know, and then you learn to swim.
That's right. And I think if you can, not maybe not to that extreme, but I don't know, maybe to that extreme, but if you can take your kids and kind of put them in situations like that, you'll give them an appreciation for.
Well, you know, I find a lot of times if you give those kids that responsibility, they usually rise to the occasion.
Yeah.
Very rarely, if they have to do something, they'll do it. But if they don't have to, they'll take the easy route. Eh?
Well, maybe
I don't do it enough. I'm not a good enough parent to make them do hard things enough.
Yeah. Yeah. You got daughters, and that's my 2-year-old's a female girl. And yeah, it's a different story. So my boy, I mean, he'll be like, oh, look at Matt's playing with the knives again. And my daughter sneezes, and I like pick her up. Oh, my gosh, you okay?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Going into her room.
It is different.
Yeah. Yeah.
If I had a boy that was as lazy as my 2 girls, I would be terrible to that boy.
That's funny.
I got to admit that. Yeah. I'm happy I have 2 daughters.
Maybe the pendulum will swing now that we're kind of witnessing what the millennials are doing. Maybe, you know, over the next, at least raising these kids, I don't know, will instill some sort of
grit. Yeah, I think they'll see that eventually it'll go too far, and people will see the ridiculousness of it, and then it'll probably get back to just being like a little bit more normal, or maybe even too far the other way, where free speech gets to, or where people get to say a bunch of horrible things again.
Yeah, yeah.
And it'll be hilarious.
Yeah. Without having to go to jail.
And then we'll have to go back to this shit.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Yeah. What's funny about that is, you know, when I was a kid, I, you know, when I say kid, like 14, 15, 16, those real prime years where you just don't know anything and you're about as awkward as it gets. And I found an old journal where I was trying to write poetry and be all deep. I don't know, because I was listening to Nirvana or something. And the good thing about that is I found that journal, and that journal will now it will not be found. It's gone. All right. No one will ever retrieve that. But kids today, they can tweet, they can say whatever they want on Facebook, and that shit's permanent. That's
yeah.
And they'll be able to go.
Oh, how many times, how many stupid things have we done in our youth that, you know, there's no evidence of, thank God, you know, that
these
kids, if there was this, if this, this scenario that they're in now, I mean, shit, I have so many times I whip my dick out that I can't even believe how many times that would be on the internet. Oh, I would never have gotten a job, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's, it's crazy. and that permanence, that's really going to affect them when they get older, because I mean, you're right. If they want a job or anything, it's just going to, and technology is getting better and better that, you know, really, literally you'll be able to take a picture of someone's face, which you can kind of do now, and do a Google image search and find all, you know, anything they've done, really. That's helpful.
Yeah.
It's just going to get more and
do
more.
Do you find there's pressure on you? Oh, sorry, but I didn't mean to.
No, it's okay. Go ahead.
Do you find there's pressure on you, or to watch that? Or do you find that if you just live a good life, you don't have to worry about it?
What do you mean? Like, I'm,
like, I mean, if everyone puts, like, for example, you put out a podcast, you talk about real issues, right? You talk, you're fairly honest with who you are.
Yeah.
So, as long as you're that way, who cares, right?
Yeah.
As long as you don't do anything really to be ashamed of, then maybe it's a great, maybe it's got a social benefit if people are aware of that.
Yeah.
Or maybe people just don't care. Like, what I've heard the argument this way, that, like, if my daughter was to put her boobs on the internet, right?
Mm-hmm.
She would be humiliated at school for like a day, and then people would already move on to the next girl's boobs on the internet, and they would forget about hers.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that it's so watered down. There's so much crap out there that nobody would even care. I think it's more of a matter of, like, if you're a decent person, you're not ashamed of anything you do in your life, then who cares how many people know you're doing it?
Yeah, I guess that's,
you know what I mean?
That's another way to look at it. And that's actually to I guess to go back to our original topic, podcasting. I mean, that is something that you think about when you start. You know, you're like,
huge.
Especially with me, I still have, you know, my job is with county government. So I don't want to. Like, I try to stay away from politics. I try to stay away from anything where they're,
it's
like,
almost done.
Where they, I think what keeps me on track, and I don't know, the original reason why I wanted to do this podcast, what really got me started on it was I don't know anything about my parents. I know how they were when they raised me, but I don't know my dad's. I know he was a conservative his whole life. He's like your beer drinking, Ford pickup driving. He's a carpenter. He's that type of guy. But I didn't know, like, what conversations he was having with people. And I wanted to kind of put these conversations out there so my kids can figure out who I was at this time. Because I can't really, at this age, you know, we'll call it just 40, you know, I can't have really any sort of deep conversations with my kids that don't involve poop jokes and I don't know, Mr. Rogers.
I like it. I get what you're saying. I think that's really cool. And, I think so. I think about that once in a while too, how this is like a time capsule of, you know, like, they might even know me as an old man, like my kids or grandkids. But if my grandpa had a podcast back in his day, and I can go look at what my grandpa was up to when he was 40 and the stuff he thought about, like sex and religion and you know, politics and all the things that you wonder about what's going through the guy's mind. I mean, that's, what a cooler thing to do than go look up grandpa's podcast, you know. And and this is always going to be there for you, you know.
Right,
what I mean?
It's always going to be there. So you're talking grandpa, great grandpa. Heck, if you know, that's the cool thing about podcasts. I mean, a radio broadcast is, you know, you set it out in the airwaves and then it's done.
Even
comedy, when you think about comedy, you for the most part you say it and then you're done. This is permanent nowadays. I mean, this is there.
Yeah, that's why I like with even comedy to know that there's going to be some goal someday where it's going to be
dedicated to an album or an hour special or something like that, where you can say, there's my book or my piece where I've my best stuff or something like that,
yeah,
where you can put it to bed. I've always, that's what the way I've always thought about comedy. Other guys just want to work as comics and just keep entertaining crowds. But for me, I think that piece of art at the end is important,
yeah,
to have something to, as your novel or your, stamp on life, you know,
sure.
Something that you,
do you,
a combination of your best work.
Are you, disciplined in writing? That's kind of a big thing with comedy.
Yeah, I'm pretty manic about it, to be honest with you. I really enjoy it, so I find every opportunity I can to do it, and most of it is garbage, but it's the only way to get out is to write, put it on paper, you know. Otherwise it'll just bounce around in my head forever.
Yeah, that's the process too, you know. That's the process of comedy, it's the process of podcasting, it's kind of the process of everything. And the worst thing is when you think of that gold and you're like, this is friggin' great. And you get home and it's just not there anymore. You know, you're like, what was I thinking? And yeah.
Oh, you should read my notes. They're just a bunch of scratches on a page and crumpled up in the corner. You know, I have to sift through garbage to find out like what I was thinking.
Yeah.
And usually you realize most of it is, like you said, like, I think I'm insane. And then the odd joke will come out and you're like, okay, there's a good one.
Yeah,
and the worst is when you think it's just gold and you're like, you want to tell this joke so bad, and you wait till you go up in front of an audience and you get an audience of like six people and they all hate you.
Yeah, that
doesn't even matter what you said.
That's so the beauty of comedy.
Going, yeah. Oh, so I loved it. My first bomb where I actually got to like really, really, really eat shit, you know?
Yeah.
It was fantastic because I had never at that point I hadn't bombed yet. Like I had a couple of good sets to start, and then I bombed so heavy that it was so, everyone felt so sorry for me, you know, like it was like the audience members didn't like, they didn't boo or anything. They just were like, they felt sad. It was awful. But then I felt it. And then once I had felt it and realized, oh, it's horrible, it feels terrible, but the next day you get over it and you move on, you know?
Yeah.
I was actually excited to get back up on stage. It made me write more, you know, it made me be better. So
that's
those kicks in the pants always make you a better person.
That was kind of funny. It's never the one that you think it is. You know, you might be working on a joke and you just love it. And every time you use it, it just doesn't seem to click. And that's kind of another cool process, I guess.
Oh, I know.
About comedy.
Oh, I know. And also the length of the jokes, when you have like all this setup and the setup is like got all these things that you remember fondly in the setup.
Yeah.
But nobody else gives a shit about it. And it's just getting in the way of the punchline, you know?
That's right.
And you're like, I have to get rid of all that stuff I love, you know, but nobody else likes it. So you have to, right? That's the hardest thing to do.
What I've been doing is, so I do a lot of research for episodes, like, and I'll write a couple pages, thoughts I'm having, you know, like with yours, I had all this stuff about just podcasting in general and what it means today and modern, I guess, times. But when I'm done, I have all this stuff and I'm not doing stand up. I'm not doing anything like that. So I started, and it has helped my podcast a lot. At night, every night, I sit down for at least an hour and just hammer something out, whether it's my thoughts on, I have an interview coming up with this guy named James Barrett. He wrote a book called Our Final Invention, and it's about AI and pretty much how it's just going to squash us all at some point. And I'll just write and write all my thoughts about it, you know, it's almost like back in college, I'm doing research. And if I didn't do that, I don't know, I would come into some of these programs or some of these episodes and just, and it's probably why some people fail, because they just don't have the discipline for that or whatever, but you got to write any sort of creative speaking, whether it's comedy, whether it's, even if you're like a motivational speaker, if you're not writing, you're doing yourself a disservice.
Well, I think, I think if you're a thinker and you're trying to add to what's out there rather than just regurgitate somebody else's thought, you're doing a disservice by not spending the time and getting more and thinking more, you know, and to just think and not write it down you're gonna lose all that time you've wasted thinking, you know?
Yeah,
that's the way I look at it. So I figure I put it on paper and then you think, well, how am I gonna get it out there? And now with the internet, it's so easy. The podcasting's great. Like, podcasting's the best format I could ever think of. And it's a great tool for counterculture. I mean, it's fantastic. Oh, it's yeah. nice now that it's, I mean, it's corporatized now. There's a lot of corporate podcasts, but the counterculture podcast, the ones of real guys like yourself, that's always what interests me the most, because you can get a real glimpse of what it's like for a real guy to be living in the Carolinas, you know, like, you really, I wouldn't have a sniff of what that's like. And then you end up listening to you and talking with you, and you're the same as we are. The common experiences are more similar. The more that you connect with people throughout the world, you realize it doesn't matter if the listener's from Vietnam or Venezuela or New Zealand or whatever, there's that similarity that we have, that you're just trying to get through life, and you're just trying to like make sure your kids turn out good, and you make the best of the time you have here, and all those sort of common threads that run through, you can find those through podcasts from guys like us or the pros that are out there doing it. You know, like, you can really, it's the best medium I can ever think of to really be unfiltered and take what real people are thinking in the world. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And this is the only time in history, really, this format. I mean, the fact that it is.
We're so fortunate to be able to do it, you know, yeah. like to be able to actually have the platform that our parents didn't have and that no generation in history has had, you know, like, we have that.
Yeah.
And our kids, as I said, are going to take it for granted because they're not going to know there was another way. But that's the good thing. I think that's the hope for the future, is that hopefully they're going to know they've always had a voice, and they're going to be thinking of it differently, where we thought our voice was lost and we're just kind of new to this thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It makes me wonder, though, too, are they going to find it in 50 years and be like, what the hell are these guys doing just clogging up the internet with all this babble?
Yeah, yeah. For no money at all. They didn't get anything out of
just,
it.
Just a bunch of narcissists.
Yeah.
Listen to me.
That is the great time in history of the world where everyone was mentally ill.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's probably not too far off the truth, Kevin.
Yeah. I mean, as far as like, it takes a certain personality to sit there and literally think that someone actually wants to hear what you have to say.
For an hour?
For an hour, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, we're nuts.
Yeah, yeah.
But there are people that do. And actually, are you able to connect with your listeners through your podcast?
I don't really know how to yet. I mean, I don't. Yeah, I guess I don't know how. I mean, the only way I know is through social media. My listenership still isn't. I mean, I think it's decent. I get a few thousand downloads per episode for having only, this is my, I don't know what number this is, 40, something like that.
No, that's great.
Yeah, so it makes me feel like.
If you're plugging away doing stand-up, you never get that.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I would never. And that's what Savannah, one of my co-hosts that come on every now and then, she's like, because I was looking at my totals for the year and it was like, I don't know, 45,000, and she's like, you stood up basically and talked to 45,000 people last year, and you know, that's
and I
guess you gotta look at it that way.
Yeah, that's the nice part. I mean, I have comics in and they're like, well, I can't do your show because I'm doing a set tonight. I'm like, well, you're doing a set for like 10 people and you could be doing my show for a lot more than that. Why don't you just do my show?
Yeah. Now, you're absolutely right with that. Now, how do you count? Like, there's so many different ways to count your numbers. I don't even know what's an accurate number to figure out how many people listen.
Yeah, that's the thing about your Podbean as well, aren't you?
Yeah. So yeah,
I don't know. I have a hard time because there's feed hits and there's episode hits and there's all those things and the numbers don't jive.
Yeah, they don't.
You know, I don't understand why my feed hits are so high, much higher than my episode hits.
Yeah, my feed hits are it's up in the hundreds of thousands versus the episode hits. So yeah, you're right. I guess it doesn't matter. Where it's going to matter is when I start. And it sounds like you are already. You're having people contact you. People are emailing. You're getting a listener base.
It's nice. It's nice to have that dialogue. We do a segment called Feedback. We got feedback every week. And that segment has really allowed us to connect with our listeners. And And it's been fun. It's been fun to hear the, hear that feedback because otherwise you don't get, you don't, I make my band play a stinger every time I say feedback. Steve doesn't have his guitar, and so he's just doing it vocally now. That's what you hear.
I thought there was a cat dying in the background. I couldn't.
Yeah. It's similar. That's the way it was written. You know, that's been huge, man. That's been the main thing, I think, because when my listeners go up, I think even the progression has not been in my number of listeners, but in the dedication of the listeners, I think. That's been the part. I've either into it or really into it, you know?
Yeah.
And the people that, there's been a lot of casual guys in and out, but the people that are into it are super into it. So that's what I really like.
Yeah. Well, that's good. And you find that, what's the best way you find to connect with your listeners? I mean, is it through emails? Is it, do you tweet to them? Like what? And when you say get in contact.
Yeah. Like if they're nice enough to send me a message on Twitter or on Instagram or Facebook or give me a message on lifefromthedutchhall@gmail.com. Yeah. Then I will make sure, like, you got to respond right away. And then usually that turns into a nice dialogue, and 99% of it's been super positive, you know, people just being encouraging and telling you to keep it up and keep doing it. Yeah. So, I mean, that's what's kept me going, has been all the feedback. If I didn't have that, I think I would have given up on that.
That's pretty sweet. Yeah. I wish. Yeah. So when is it, like, at what point of doing your podcast, you get that person who can, it sounded like you just said, hey, can you go get me that whiskey? And they got you the whiskey, and now you have people saying stuff. And like, when does that happen?
You have to hire a bartender. It's important for any podcast. I don't know how anyone gets through without a bartender.
That's
and I made it specific when I set up my microphone. I put it as far away from the fridge as I could, so that somebody would have to give it to me. It gives me a sense of power, and I feel that's my real pay, is the power I hold over the people that I get to invite in the hall.
See, there's that narcissism that we were talking about.
I'm rot with it. Yeah, I'm definitely out of my head. Yeah.
So one of my favorite things about your episode is your intro music. It's fantastic. What caught me, because when I was first listening, I was going, I don't know, just flipping up through or going through some of your episodes, and I heard this, I don't know if this is not the PC way to say it. It's down here, we would call it a Jew harp. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, it was on the Mexico episode, right? It was, we call it a kazoo.
Okay, because I heard, you know, the thing, to me it sounded like that metal thing that goes in your mouth and you kind of flick the...
Oh, yes. Jaw harp, right?
Like, oh, jaw harp. Dwing, dwing.
Yeah, you guys are more racist than
we. Yeah, I guess we are down here. You guys just just change the E to an A. Yeah. Well, do you know what? Maybe that's funny. That's funny. Maybe I just...
No, it wasn't that, though. We had a slap rattle, and then one time we played with kazoo.
Uh-huh.
But I don't think we've ever played with one of those yet.
Okay,
so if we can find one, we would definitely work it into a song.
It was your the kazoo then. But you did Bulls on Parade. I mean, that was, I'm like, what is this? How do I know this? And then I heard it. I'm like, that's awesome. That was really great.
Oh yeah. It's been fun. I mean, that's one of the big things. Last night's show, we made the band write a song, mm-hmm. and they ended up writing a song and then actually writing two songs, and the other one's a good one. and they wouldn't play it for me, so
that's funny.
But it's been so much fun to be able to come up with, like, usually if we get ourselves in it was a great I thought it was a great start for the show, because the band was already in a creative mood.
Yeah.
And then it kind of spread out into the rest of us to be able to kind of riff on stuff and come up with quips and stuff, like funny stuff, to try to make the show entertaining. So
yeah,
it's fantastic, man. From living a life in a, you know, being a bank lender and sitting in an office and not really having a lot of opportunity to be creative, to then surrounding yourself with a bunch of really talented musicians that are able to do things you could only dream of. It's like a real pleasure just to watch those guys. Like, I really enjoy it every week.
Yeah. That's why you can't get rid of me.
That's why we can't get rid of Steve. Yeah.
That's funny.
And he even comes for this stuff. Just to watch me talk to you.
I'll edit together like a little beginning, or I'll take some clips, you know, from the shows, and that's all I have going right now. But Yeah.
I don't know. It's been a great pleasure to talk to you, Kevin. I really appreciate meeting you. It always gives you perspective on life when you get to meet a person that's going through it the same way you are. And
absolutely.
I really do think this is terrific. So Thank you for the opportunity to talk to you.
Hey, no problem. Hey, I got one last question for you.
All right.
What, and I'll tell you kind of how I feel about it after you, but, when you put your shows out, do you do much editing or you hit record and then just put it out there?
Yeah, hit record and put it out.
It's so much better to do it that way.
Yeah, it scares the shit out of me to be, because I know that if I was to start editing, I just put it out. And then there's sometimes, the only thing I'll take out is if one person says a person's name and they're not supposed to.
Yeah.
Or if they said something really embarrassing and they said, please don't put that on the internet, then I'll find it and edit it out quick. But those are just like quick edits before I go out.
All right, man. So live from the Dutch Hall, I was going to ask you actually where you got that name.
Well, we have my pool house right here where we're sitting, which used to have my pool motor in it, but we took it out. Okay. It was making too much noise.
Yeah.
We call it the Dutch Hall. And the reason we do it is because there's a little town called Delhi, Ontario, that's right next door to where we live.
Okay.
And they have a lot of, they have the Hungarian Hall and the German Hall and the Polish Hall, but I'm of Dutch heritage. So we always joked around that, this was the Dutch Hall because it was free, you know, like, cause we have to pay for it.
Yeah.
And, my people that came to visit me would always call it the Dutch Hall before. And then when we started the podcast, since it was being recorded out here, we just called it Live from the Dutch Hall.
Nice.
And then, that's it in a nutshell.
So you have
nothing too fancy.
You have your basic, you have basically a standalone studio then. That's pretty, it's pretty sweet.
Yeah, it's been pretty good. And a lot of the equipment and stuff all came from listener contributions and people supporting our Amazon links and stuff like that. So we were able to upgrade our board so that we could have the band and all that stuff was done through listener contributions. So it's been kind of nice to see people pitch in and then we can make the show better and then they can enjoy themselves more. So
yeah,
hope they keep doing that.
Where can people reach you? Is it, what's your website?
My website's livefromthedutchhall.com.
Okay.
And, you can always get a hold of me by email or on Twitter or Facebook. I'm Dutch Hall on Twitter and Instagram, and I am, Live from the Dutch Hall on Facebook.
All right. Fantastic. Hey, thanks for taking the time. This was a fun show. Besides the little technical difficulties at first, but.
Oh, it was a pleasure, man. I really enjoy meeting you. So thank you very much for having me on. And for my listeners, if you want to check out the Wait What If podcast, it's Wait What.
It's
Wait.com.
It's waitwhatif.com.
Oh, yeah. Sorry about that, Kevin. Waitwhatif.com. Don't put in that last word like I told you. Waitwhatif.com. And thank you very much, Kevin, for the opportunity. I had a great time.
You bet, Pete. Take care.
Like us on facebook.com/WWI Podcast. And at WWI Podcast on Twitter. Drop us a line at waitwhatifpodcast@yahoo.com. Listen to us on iTunes, Stitcher, or TuneIn Internet Radio. Enjoyed your listening experience. Now go forth and expand your reality.